Broadcasting live from Prescott Valley, Arizona, this is the Progressive Technology Hour, and I'm your host, Bill Alec, and I'm here with my lovely producer, Aurora Light. Thank you. Just to give you a little background about myself, I'm a degreed electrical engineer, and I currently do software consulting work for major corporations. That describes my day job. At night, I become Dr. Houdini, researcher, explorer, and experimenter in the world of exotic technologies. What are exotic technologies? Well, this includes such areas as free energy, gravity, anti-gravity control, the study of nature of time and time travel. We'll explore not only the technology, but also the how-to part of the technology. So let's have some fun today and explore the world of exotic technologies. Well, folks, before I introduce my fascinating guest today, you know, I want to talk about this upcoming conference in Sedona, Arizona. It's called the Ed Grimsley UFO Skywatch Conference, and it stars Ed Grimsley with his night vision goggles. And I know a lot of you listeners out there have been following a few weeks about a description of this fascinating conference. And I also want to mention that we also added a special venture here called Vortex Tours of Sedona that will be conducting tours before and after the conference. And our plan here is to show people the vortexes around the Sedona area with Michael Elejon. And, of course, many of you know Michael Elejon is a direct voice channel to the ETs. And so we're going to be touring.
Human-appearing ETs.
Yes, the human-appearing ETs, as Aurora Light likes to use, and also Michael.
I don't want them to get it confused with the grays.
Right, right. Well, you know, the grays are associated with abduction phenomena, and they talked quite a bit about that at the Laughlin UFO Congress held a couple of months back, and you know, the focus there was on the abduction phenomena with the grays. And, folks, you know, we're mainly focused on the contactee phenomena. You know, and there's a big distinction here between abduction and contactees. Because the contactee phenomena is generally associated with friendly human-appearing ETs that are in guardian action around this planet. And there's this war in space that's occurring, a cleansing of the heavens, so to speak, that is occurring today and probably been going on for thousands of years. And, you know, we have biblical accounts going back to ancient times here of contact with ETs. So we get a chance with Ed Grimsley and his night vision goggles to check out these ET wars, so to speak. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering if we're involved. You know, the U.S. government, you know, the black op world is also involved in this. And I'll tell you, folks, there's virtually no doubt in my mind that we, of course, have this anti-gravity technology. And we've had it for many decades, perhaps going back as far back as Roswell.
How about Egypt?
Well, ancient Egypt, Aurora?
Yeah.
Well, yes. I mean, that goes back to ancient times.
It's been suppressed since then.
But, you know, we're talking about this technology ending up in, you know, this black op world. And we know they have it. Ben Rich, CEO of Lockheed Corporation, you know, he's retired, and I think he passed away some years back. Admitted that we have this technology, okay, this anti-gravity technology, And, you know, we've had it for decades, and it goes even further back with the German Nazis and the Nazi Bell Project. And I spent a few shows talking about that, you know, some very exciting information there, especially with a historian by the name of Dr. Joe Farrell. You know, I had him on a few times. And we spent a number of shows talking about the Nazi Bell Project. So this leads up to, you know, well, what's going on today in the black op world? And now I want to introduce my guest here, John Lear. John Lear is the son of a famous inventor of the Learjet, Bill Lear. He is retired Lockheed L-1011 captain and is highly regarded in the aviation circles. He has flown over 150 test aircraft and has won every award granted by the Federal Aviation Administration. John also holds 18 world speed records and has worked for 28 different aircraft corporations. During the late 1980s and early 90s, John began coming forward with some startling revelations concerning the subject of aerial phenomena and unidentified flying objects. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
John, what can you tell us about Area 51 and our secret space fleet?
Well, it starts back at the end of World War II. We were unable to make the plutonium for our nuclear weapons we wanted to drop on Japan, but Germany did have the plutonium. So in return for them, they gave us the plutonium. We put them in our bomb Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and in return, we allowed the Nazis, the top echelon of the Nazis, to come into the United States. They took over our major corporations and NASA, and they've been running them ever since. They brought also with them technology that they had. Some of it included anti-grav. As you know, my father in 1953 was a major contractor on the anti-gravity research, and he didn't talk much about it, and as a matter of fact, not at all. But I do figure that that the United States had some was very well advanced in anti-gravity research by 1956. They certainly probably had ships then that had some form of anti-gravity, and in the past 50 years have developed and improved that anti-gravity. Mm-hmm. Now in the late starting in the 60s. They needed a lot of money, they being NASA and the Nazi government. So what they did is they planned this Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs to get a lot of money. Most of those programs never went. The Apollo program that allegedly went to the moon and made six landings there, that was all a hoax. That never happened. That was
a really neat
hoax. What they did was they took that $30 billion that they allegedly spent on going to the moon and did other stuff. And what they did was they orbited between 8 and 12 weapons orbiting platforms that circle the Earth. They started that in 1969, and it's an ongoing program. Those orbiting platforms are supplied both with fresh fruit, vegetables, cargo supplies of all kinds by the shuttle. Now, when the shuttle takes off from Kennedy, you notice that it's 3 days before it docks with the International Space Station. Now, of course, the NASA BS line is that it takes that long to catch up with the ISS. Well, of course, they've been using that nonsense for 25 years. What the shuttle is really doing is, after it takes off, it hooks up and docks with these different orbiting weapons platforms to unload the vegetables, cargo, astronauts, and other things. Then they finally get to the ISS, And just coincidentally, both the Soyuz and Progress rockets have now launched from Russia, and they arrive at the ISS a couple days before the shuttle gets there. What they have is more supplies, so all those supplies are transloaded from the Progress and Soyuz vehicles back into the shuttle, and when it undocks 13 days later, of course, we're told that it takes 2 days to land at Kennedy because they give us this nonsense. Oh, they have to have rest periods, and they have to do all their checklists. That's nonsense. From undocking at the International Space Station to landing at Kennedy should take 54 minutes, but as you know, it usually takes 2.5 days, and what they're doing is they're taking all those supplies brought up by the Soyuz and Progress back down to the line to the different weapons carriers, or the orbiting weapons platforms.
Uh-huh. Very interesting. So we have this secret military program with all these launch platforms.
Yes, and we're told that astronauts only go into space with a space shuttle. That's baloney. We have man-rated rockets, which are offshoots of the Atlas, Titan, Zenith 3SL, Soyuz, Progress. All those are man-rated, and astronauts go up and down on those things every day. The United States Space Command, you can pull that up on the website. Take a look at that. I normally ask people how many astronauts they think are current and qualified, and they say, well, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20. Well, between all the services, the Marines, the Army, Air Force, and Navy, there's over 5,000 qualified and current astronauts flying in the skies these days.
Really?
Yeah, wow. That's why the Space Command is so secret. You know, pull up Space Command and just look at the immense amount of work that's being doing and all the different divisions and stuff. And I have a couple friends that went into Space Command, and they said that they're briefed when they go in there. They say, you know, initially, if they're accepted in Space Command, they say, we want you to say goodbye to all your friends because you will never, ever be allowed to talk with them or associate with them again. And the reason is because they don't want an accidental slip at a bar or at a party or something. For instance, the guy would say, oh, man, you'll never guess what I'm doing now. So they just completely eliminate all contact with all previous friends, and that's a condition of employment with Strategic Space Command.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that the Apollo moon landing project was completely hoaxed. Is that correct?
Yeah, Apollo 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17, all going to the moon and all the books. That was all a hoax. No, nobody ever went there. First of all, we can't go anywhere beyond the Van Allen Belt. The Van Allen Belt extends from about 600 miles altitude to about 25,000 miles, and it's extremely lethal radiation. We cannot get through it. We can send we can send mechanical orbiters through it, like when we sent and the Lunar Orbiter series in 1965, 1966, 67 that photographed the moon, but no man ever went beyond that. So what we had to do is we had to fake it, and there's just so many websites and so many books available that tells exactly how they do it. For one is one of the books called Dark Moon by Bennett and Percy. That details exactly how they hoaxed the Apollo missions. There's another one called One Small Step by a German author called Gerhard Wisnowski, and he improves on Dark Moon's evidence. There's just, you know, hundreds of little teeny bits and pieces that prove that Apollo never went.
Well, you know, I once saw this photo that was taken in Flagstaff of a moonscape, something like a model moonscape.
Of course, that's where they did a lot of the practice, and that's where they did a lot of the photography. The main hoaxing photography done was done at the NASA Research Center in Langley, Virginia. And if you go to thelivingmoon.com, we have pictures of the giant crane that was used to lift the lunar lander as if it was taking taking off and taking off from the moon. It was all hoax. It was very well done, though. For instance, I was engaged in a debate in the last couple of days over Apollo 13 and the supposed explosion. Say, well, that was all a hoax. There was nothing ever like that. That was part of the plan to get people interested back in the moon thing and to show that the good old American USA technology saved the day again, and that we could make mistakes, but by gosh, we could save our astronauts. The Apollo 13 never went, and one of the clues that we know is on April 14th, 1970, which is when they were due to land on the moon, the part of the moon they were going to land on, Frau Moreau, it was nighttime. Now, you know, that's so ridiculous. First of all, the lunar lander didn't have any night lights or landing lights, and why would they land at night anyway? So anybody can go to any part of the website, pick up phase of the moon, they can go and put in April 14th, 1970, they can see where the Terminator is, then they can locate Frau Moreau, and they'll find out it's several hundred miles west of the Terminator in complete darkness. So, you know, Apollo 13 didn't go, but if it had, you know, it would have been landing in complete darkness, which is a joke.
Huh. Wow. That's startling information there.
You know, Bill Casing was the original guy that came out and told us that Apollo was a hoax. And, you know, I'm 66 years old, and I grew up in the Apollo program and the space program, and I was what they call an Apollo hugger. I believed in the program, and I was excited when we went to the moon, and I met several astronauts, and I met John Glenn, and I have his signature in my logbook, and Alan Shepard, and it was really neat. I really enjoyed that, but when last year somebody sent me some videos of the lunar landers landing and said, John, can you take a look at these and see if you find anything odd? I looked at the NASA videos of the six landings, and I couldn't believe it. They were all hoaxed. I had a feeling in the pit of my stomach. I was sick because I realized that I had been taken, made a fool of, because I actually believed they went to the moon. But they didn't. There's no way.
Mm-hmm. So that video that was made some years back by this researcher, you're saying is
Bart
true.
Sabril. Bart Sabril, I think.
Yes,
yeah, that's all true. I thought he was a nut, too, both him and Casing. And I thought, you guys are nuts, you know. We did go to the moon, but what was secret was what we found on the moon. There was, you know, aliens and stuff like that. But that was just a cover story. We never went there, and it turns out Bill Casing was correct. And I finally got his book, We Never Went to the Moon, and it has some very interesting stories. He has one... the story of a pilot that came to him and said that he was flying over the Pacific when he saw the Apollo 11 capsule being pushed out of a C-5A and made to made the public think that, you know, it was coming back to the moon. But all they did was these astronauts were sent to, I believe, Johnston Island. And when it was time for them to come back from the moon, all they did is load the Apollo capsule in the C-5A, take it up, fly it over the aircraft carrier, drop it. And, of course, the cameras looked up and saw the three parachutes, and, oh, yes, here it is back from the moon. But the tip-off of the Apollo 11 was the video, and you can Google this and take a look at it from yourself, is when the three astronauts, Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins, after being 11 days on their back in zero gravity, the helicopter picks them up, takes them to the deck of the Hornet, and here they come out of the helicopter in their quarantine suits, hop, skipping and jumping down a flight of steps, which has five steps, and across the deck into the quarantine vehicle. Now, do you think that after being 11 days in space on their back in zero gravity, that those guys could hop, skip, and jump and go down those steps just like they'd been exercising for those 11 days? Of course not. It was all fake. But there's all these little teeny details that make up that what a hoax Apollo was.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So instead, the money went into these secret programs.
The secret program, the orbiting weapons, and our technology is at least 50 years ahead of where everybody thinks it is. And we have some amazing stuff up there, and the last time they used these, there's one weapon they got that uses molecular disassociation technology. If you want details on that, go to drjudywood.com. That's D-R-J-U-D-Y. WOOD.com, drjudywood.com. It's fascinating, the research that she has done. Now, this molecular disassociation is a weapon which completely destroys matter and turns it into dust, 80 micron size, and this is what they use to destroy the World Trade Center. Of course, you hear that Eric 19 Arab hijackers hijacked airplanes and they flew into the World Trade Center. That was totally BS. None of that happened. None of those airplanes crashed. I'm a pilot. I've been one for 40 years. I built airplanes, flown them, worked on them. No airplanes crashed in the World Trade Center. But what did happen and why they disintegrated the way they did is because this weapon, using molecular disassociation, was aimed at the World Trade Center and dropped both those buildings. Now, they were both 110 stories high. If you used commercial explosives to drop those things, you're going to have about 13% of the height left, because commercial explosives won't destroy matter. But in the case of the World Trade Center, there was less than one story left. All there was mounds and mounds and mounds of dust, about 80 microns in size, and that's what this molecular dissociation did. Now, the problem they ran into is whatever technology that molecular dissociation uses, it's not self-quenching. This means it hasn't gone out, and that's why there have been no buildings built in the 8 years since 9/11 happened. Every time they try to build a concrete or steel building on ground zero, it starts disintegrating, so they can't build anything there, and they're telling the public, oh, we have union contract problems, and we have, we can't decide what kind of a building to put up. That's not the reason. The reason is everything we try to build up there, it starts disintegrating with the after effects and non-self-quenching effects of this weapon they used to destroy it in the first place.
So you're saying that there's a residual effect there?
Yeah, non-self-quenching.
In the ground.
They call it non-self-quenching. In other words, it doesn't go out. Whatever the technology was, it doesn't go out. It's still there. It's still active.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had Dr. Judy Woods on my show, I think it was back in November of last year.
Oh, great.
Yes, she presented quite a bit of evidence, supporting this theory. And
she's really something else. I really like that the lady. She is just as sharp as a tack.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and one of the effects that she talked about was, of course, this disintegration of matter.
Right.
Yeah, also how it leaves this this residual effect, something like a cold melting of metals, which brings up the John Hutchison effect.
Yeah.
And I had John on several times last year, talking about this, in his work. And John has actually demonstrated how you can cold melt metals using his technology, which is rather extraordinary.
Yeah, their specialty is in that area. Now, my specialty is aviation and why there couldn't have been any airplanes on 9/11. And we start with the fact that NIST, the National Institute of Science and Technology, tells us that the Boeing 767 that crashed into the World Trade Center was going 540 miles an hour. Now, there's about 1,001 reasons why it couldn't do that. But the main reason it couldn't do that is because it violates all laws of aerodynamics. The law of parasite drag, which doubles the speed, and parasite power, which cubes with the speed. It's just absolutely impossible for that airplane to go much faster than 360 knots. And so we start with that. And, you know, I go back to the hijackers and ask, are you telling me that an Arab hijacker took over a Boeing 67? How did they do it? And they say, well, they had box cutters. And I say, okay, well, how do you think they killed the pilots? Well, they probably slit their throat. And I say, do you know what you're talking about? If you slit somebody's throat, you're going to get the carotid artery, and there's going to be blood all over the place. It's going to be all over the yoke. It's all going to be over the panel, the throttles, the seat, everything. Now, you're telling me an Arab hijacker knows how to electrically put that seat in the aft position so that he can pull that pilot out so he can get in it? And if he gets in it with all that blood over, he's going to fly it with the precision that he did? It's impossible. Don't feed me that. It's not true. It couldn't have happened. It didn't happen.
Well, you know, I worked on some of those controls back in the 90s. Over there at Honeywell, you know, in their flight systems group. And we were working on, you know, these flight controllers for these commercial aircraft. And, yes, I mean, in terms of piloting a craft, one of these aircraft doesn't really require a pilot. I mean, these automated systems have no trouble flying an aircraft.
Right. Now, you're trying to tell me that an Arab would know how to program that airplane? Impossible.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when you're training, you know, at some, you know, CIA CIA base.
You're talking about the government controlling the aircraft.
Well, yes. Aurora,
yeah, the alleged Arab pilots had no training. They allegedly, you know, got some 172 training. I think one of them flew an Apache. But when they got in the seat of a Boeing 767, a highly sophisticated panel, they wouldn't have any idea of how to turn that airplane around and then set it on a course for New York. It's not like 90 miles away you can see New York. They'd have to have a general heading of where to go, and there's just no way they could do that.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking at some sort of an automated, you know, it's an automated aircraft then.
No, there were no airplanes. There were no airplanes at the World Trade Center. There were no airplanes at Shanksville. There was no airplane at the Pentagon. And if you say, well, you know, they had bodies at the Pentagon, that's not true. April Gallup, who worked for the Army and was an intelligence specialist, her desk was 40 feet from the hole where this plane allegedly went in. Her 6-month-old son was at her feet in his little car seat when the explosion occurred around 9 o'clock. The explosion went off on that wall, and what she did is picked him up, threw him over her shoulder, and climbed out that hole. She said there was no airplane, there was no missile, there was no fuel, there was no gas, there was nothing except, you know, a little fire. And she said there was one 55-gallon drum that was on fire, and that was the diesel fuel to provide the smoke. But nothing crashed into the Pentagon. Nothing could have crashed in the Pentagon. And, of course, she went, climbed through that hole, went out on the grass, and waited for triage. And when Army intelligence came to her and told her that she saw an airplane, she said, no, she didn't. Now, you can Google her name on the internet and find out what hell the Army has made her life since then, but it's April Gallup, G-A-L-L-O-P, and it's an amazing story. So, you know, nothing happened at the Pentagon. That was BS. And Shanksville, you know, no airplane. There were no airplane parts, no engine parts. You know,
right.
I'm an expert in aviation.
Yeah. Yes, I heard
nothing
about
ever
that.
Happened there. Nothing was shot down. Same thing for the World Trade Center. And when people say, oh, yeah, there was parts lying around, I said, there has not been one single identifiable part from either of those two 757s or two 767s that has been presented by the FAA or the FBI or the NTSB to the public as having come from those airplanes. It just didn't happen. Now, that engine on Murray Street that they say, oh, that's the one that came off on United 175 that hit the South Tower. No, I don't think so. First of all, it was way, way too small, and it has been identified as a CFM-56. which is a General Electric engine. The problem is United Airlines use Pratt & Whitney engines. So what is a General Electric engine doing on an airliner that that uses Pratt & Whitney engines? You know, the whole thing was a hoax. And the reason, you know, that happened is because the people who were planning this had some detail, but not all of the details.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I recall in the photos of the Pentagon, you know, very early on there, of just one engine. And, it just didn't fit the profile.
There wasn't an engine, they showed a turbine disc.
Right?
No, but nothing that what are some of the forums I post on? I post an engine, the MD-11, Swissair MD-11 that crashed in Canada off the, near Nova Scotia. They had that electrical fire and it crashed in the ocean. The MD-11 used the identical engine that the Boeing 767 has, and I show a picture of how huge that engine is. And compare it to the little engine that was on Murray Street. And I say, now, does that engine look the same to you? No, of course not. The engine on Murray Street was unloaded from a van about the same time that 9/11 happened. It was an inside job. But somebody picked the wrong engine. I've heard that they'd use parts off of different wrecks. So I don't know where that came from.
Well, you know, there was a lot of secrecy involved in that, picking up parts with that Pentagon explosion. A tremendous amount of secrecy involved in that.
Right, because there were no parts. That little thing that's red, white, and blue that you see, supposedly that came off. You know, what they did is they used a lot of parts for the Pentagon crash. Not a lot, but they only had like three or four parts from that American Airlines crash in Cali in 1995, where the American Airlines, I think it was an MD, let's see, what was that? That was like a DC-9, MD-80, I think they call them. Or it could have been a 75. No, yeah, I think it was a MD-80. And they used some of those parts scattered around to make them think that, they came off a Boeing 757 that crashed in the Pentagon. But there was only about 1,000 reasons why a Boeing 757 couldn't have crashed in the Pentagon.
Right.
And of course, I was the one that exposed the flight director, digital flight data recorder, and exposed how that was hoaxed. Now, the interesting thing about that flight data recorder is because it has 156 channels that it records, and it records, you know, the angle of the aileron and the setting of the altimeters and airspeed. I mean, there's 156 channels, and you have to know how to read it, but I happen to be an expert on it. So I went through it from beginning to end, and what I found out was that during the descent, from cruise altitude, where allegedly Hani Hanjour is flying this airplane by himself, headed for the Pentagon at 18,000 feet, is where you set the local barometric altimeter. So on the flight data recorder, it has the co-pilot's altimeter being set to local barometric, Reagan International local barometric, and then 30 seconds later, the pilot's altimeter being set to local barometric. Now, my question here is, first of all, why would Hani Hanjour, if he's going to crash his airplane, set the altimeters anyway? Second of all, how did he know how to set them at 18,000 feet? And third of all, why would he have set the co-pilot's altimeter when he was flying the airplane? But anyway, the most important question is, how did he get the exact altimeter setting from Reagan International? Because he was 200 miles away. He couldn't have picked it up on the radio, and he certainly wasn't talking to center because nobody knew where he was. So there's so many questions about that flight data recorder recording and the information it gives, not to mention the fact that if you interpret the flight data recorder correctly, whatever airplane that was in overflew the Pentagon by 400 feet. So it's possible that they did have a real airplane, but that it overflew the Pentagon and flew somewhere else. I probably would buy that theory.
Now, wasn't there an aircraft targeted for the White House?
That was supposedly Flight 93. Now, Flight 93 is the one that took off. Let's see, Flight 93. I'm trying to remember what airport it took off. I think Newark. It landed in Cleveland. There's videotape which has been carefully suppressed, but I remember that morning watching it. It landed at Cleveland Hopkins Airport. The passengers were unloaded into the NASA facility there, and then the airplane took off and disappeared. Now, allegedly, Flight 93 was supposed to go to the White House. What I think it was, I think they were going to allege that it was the one that was supposed to crash into Building 7. Because as you remember, Building 7 collapsed without anything actually hitting it. So whatever they had for 93, for some reason, the plans broke down and they had to make a quick fake crash at Shanksville, and they didn't do a very good job. You know, there was a little teeny hole there, no parts from a Boeing 757. You know, there's about 2 million stamped and identified parts from any of those airplanes, and not one was found that could be traced. Well, not found anyway, but they could be traced to the maintenance records of that particular airplane. What's going on?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello, Bill. Okay. Yeah, we lost connection here for a second. But we're back on again. John?
Yeah.
Johnny there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're talking about Flight 93. Gosh, this is an intriguing discussion today. Really enlightening.
Yeah, Flight 93, you know, after they unloaded the passengers at Cleveland Hopkins, it disappeared. And, you know, allegedly it crashed in Shanksville, but that was a hastily prepared crash. There was a hole there, but no airplane could have possibly disappeared in that. There was no evidence of engines. People claimed that, oh, yeah, it was shot down, but there's been no parts. You don't realize those airplanes have huge engines, and they have to be accounted for. I mean, there's huge forgings in those airplanes that have to be accounted for, and there weren't any in the World Trade Center. There weren't any at the Pentagon, and there weren't any Shanksville. And the simple reason is because there were no airplanes. It was a hoax. It was video fakery. It was just like the Apollo program.
Mm-hmm. So really, that that video of the of a plane crashing into the Trade Tower. Well, this is the Trade Tower, Aurora.
Yeah.
That was faked. Then.
Right. There's 44 of those videos, and I can look at each single video and tell you exactly how it was faked. The most famous one is the CNN, where it has the airplane gliding into the World Trade Center, just like it was a hot knife going through butter. You know, the let me tell you how the World Trade Center was constructed. It had a core, 47 cores at the middle, and from the outside, the windows or the steel beams were placed 39 inches on center, so there would have been about 20 of those on the one side, and after getting through that, the core was 60 feet beyond that. So if this had really been a Boeing 767 or airplane, as soon as it hit that huge, strong core, the parts would have been coming off only 60 feet. The airplane is 120 or 30 feet long. There would have been tail parts coming off, elevator parts coming off, everything coming off outside, and nothing came off. It, you know, it looked like the airplane just glided through. But once it hit the core,
right,
60 feet inside, there would have been a tremendous force that would have started knocking pieces off that Boeing 67. But the fact is, no Boeing 67 crashed in the World Trade Center. It was video fakery, and all 44 of those tapes, I can tell you each one where it was faked. That's one of the interesting questions. There's a website that is tracing all the passengers, and it seems that many of the passengers did not exist. There's no Social Security number, no driver's license number, no applying for the government $1 million that you got for keeping your mouth shut. I don't have the website here, but you can dial or you can Google up 9/11 missing passengers and a bunch of websites that have done research into that. Where the other passengers went, the real passengers, I haven't the slightest idea. Did they murder them? I don't know. This is a problem that that many people have with the 9/11 scenario, is they say, okay, well, you know, I can believe most of what you say, John, but all I want to know is where the passengers went. I don't know where they went. But I can tell you one thing, they didn't go into the World Trade Center, they didn't go into the Pentagon, and they didn't crash at Shanksville.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that one of Bush's brothers was in charge of security a couple of weeks before this 9/11 right. at the Trade Center.
At the Trade Center, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Marvin Bush.
Yeah, it was Marvin Bush.
Yeah, I remember that.
What role
supposedly,
you
know, a lot of people say, yeah, there was explosives brought in, and they might have brought something in, but the main destructive power for the World Trade Center was the orbiting platforms using molecular dissociation technology.
So it was a platform from space that was aimed at the Trade Center then?
Right. We had 8 to 12 orbiting weapons platforms, which were the ones that we started building in 1969 using the money that was supposed to go to the Apollo program, but was used for these weapons platforms. And they've been slowly building them using the shuttle and all the other man-rated rockets that we have in our inventory. The problem is people have been so hoaxed thinking that the shuttle is the only thing that goes into space. And, of course, we only see 7 or 8 astronauts in that shuttle, and, of course, people think that's all there are. Well, the truth is that the shuttle was originally made for 10 people, and it probably had seats for 4 more. So just with the shuttle, we have, you know, more people than we know. First of all, the NASA never releases the landing weight for the shuttle, and the reason is because they don't want us to figure out how many astronauts are really going up and down. Now, when the shuttle launches and when it lands, we see 7 smiling faces of the public astronauts, but there's secret astronauts that occupy those seats, and when it lands, after the cameras are gone and all the PR is done, that's when those guys deplane. Now, one of the platforms that we have, orbiting weapons platforms, one of them has manufacturing facilities, and they make skin covering for airplanes, submarines, and different kinds of naval boats called D.D. And this thing has amazing capabilities, and what it does is they make it in zero G on one of these platforms, load it onto the space shuttle, and then it's brought back down to Earth and used in these various weapons and boats.
John, we have a question here from Sheldon in Tucson. Sheldon, are you with us here?
Yeah. Hello, William.
Hello.
Hi, Sheldon.
Can
you hear me? Yeah, we can hear you, Sheldon.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, John, do you think that Hurricane Aaron was contributory at all in bringing down those towers?
Yeah, Hurricane Aaron was was manufactured by a combination of HAARP and some of the equipment we have on these satellites. It went up the East Coast and sat 100 miles to the east of New York City and contributed somehow to 9/11. Now, I don't know whether its contribution was the winds that it created that put all that smoke and debris and everything out to sea instead of inland. But, yeah, Hurricane Aaron, which very few people know about, and Sheldon is very well informed, Hurricane Aaron was right there off the coast of New York and has been hidden very carefully. carefully. Now we have the capability of producing hurricanes, tornadoes, and all kinds of stuff. As a matter of fact, Katrina, if you look at the footprint of that thing, we guided, and I say we, who's ever running the program there, we guided that thing 60 miles straight north right into New Orleans. That was not an accident. That was guided technology.
John, what about all these this chemtrail spraying program that's going on?
You know, that's a really interesting program and something I know very little about. They're obviously doing something. There's a rumor that Dr. who's the guy that invented the H-bomb? Yeah, I'm getting so old, I forget. I have these memory lapses. No. The H-bomb. Dr. Anyway, he said that he made a statement that this stuff was reflected material trying to eliminate some of the effects of global warming. Global warming, while it may be happening, is not man-made. Global warming is just a normal cycle that the Earth goes through every, you know, so many thousands of years. We're not causing it. We couldn't possibly cause it. We couldn't possibly eliminate it. So, you know, all that is a hoax. And all that stuff is just to, you know, to make us worry about things, to keep us in a constant state of anxiety. And people are worried about the starving children in Africa and the people, soldiers are dying in Iraq and the people that are getting killed in Afghanistan. What people have to understand is they're only responsible for themselves. They're responsible for living their lives with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. That's all they have to do. They don't have to worry about all that stuff because everything starts with them and everything starts with ourselves. We have to learn how to live our lives with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And while we're doing that, we need to express our love for our family every single day. And this doesn't mean saying, love you, as you're flying out the kitchen door. This means taking your family in your arms, looking deep into their eyes, into their soul, and telling you how much you love them.
John, there seems to be a massive hoax being perpetrated on the people here.
Yes, it includes Planet Nibiru and Planet X, and all that is baloney. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. 2012 is going to be here just like every other year, and that date in December, that's going to be a day just like every other day. It's a constant government effort to keep you in a state of anxiety, worrying, and thinking about other things, and it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you. I mean, this is, you know, we're seeing what seems to be a massive fraud being perpetrated on the people now with this economic situation. Do you have any comment about what's going on today with the economic
situation? It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But like I say, you only have, you know, one thing to worry about, and that's yourself. And I can't repeat it too many times. You have to live your life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, and you have to express your love to your family. You do those things, and you'll be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. So where do we go from here, then, you know, with this massive fraud that's going on? You know,
we just do the best we can here,
right,
because that's all we can do.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think this is leading to with this, you know, with the secret government here? I mean, what do you think is going to happen in the future here? You know, I mean, what are these guys
up to? You know, I'm a terrible, you know, I try not to predict things, you know, because I'm always wrong, and I quit doing that. I don't know what they got cooked up. I do know that they have fantastic technology, and if they wanted to, they could actually make a display which would make us think that we were being attacked from aliens from outer space, which is not going to happen.
Ah, yes, the false flag operation.
That is a hoax, and if it happens, you can be sure that it was a hoax, just like the Apollo program was and 9/11 was. They'll put holograms in the air, that giant, you know, things and saucers, and oh my God, we're getting attacked, but we'll save you. All you have to do is climb in this railroad car, and we'll take you to the safe place.
Yes. Yeah, well, those railroad cars, from what I hear, are parked over there in New Mexico. And they are not accessible from Google Satellite.
Yeah, well, careful what you see from Google, because anything you see from Google is what they want you to see.
Right.
Every single important part is airbrushed. And if you want an example, just go to Wake Island, which is one of our major launch facilities, just like Kwajalein is. They've got launch complexes all over the place. As a matter of fact, the United States has 24 major launch complexes around the world, and people just think in terms of launch complexes as Kennedy, Vandenberg, and the Kwajalein. And on Kwajalein, there's the Ronald Reagan launch facility there. But there are, in fact, about 24 others located around the world where we launch all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. What do you know about anti-gravity?
As I told you, my father was a major contractor in 1953. He's some of the guys
right.
up there on livingmoon.com. You can see it. And he was very involved in that. He never spoke much about it to me. As a matter of fact, I don't remember. He may have spoken to a little bit about it. But if anybody wants the true story on gravity and why Einstein was wrong and why Newton was wrong, you want to go to Amazon.com and buy a book called Gravitational Force of the Sun by Perry Spolter, S-P-O-L-T-E-R. This is the most important book of the millennium. It was written in 1993. Perry Spolter was a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She has a doctorate in microbiology, but she's also a supreme mathematician. And she figured out the gravitational force in the sun and the implications of gravity. And so people got to read that. And like I say, it's Gravitational Force of the Sun. You can get it through Amazon.com. But what's important is we've, we really don't know what causes gravity. Mm-hmm. And the stuff we're fed about the moon being 1/6 gravity is baloney. The moon mm-hmm. has the same, almost the same gravity as Earth. It has an atmosphere that's a lot thinner than Earth, but there's certainly a breathable atmosphere there, and millions of people have lived there. And as hard as that is for people to believe, the fact is it's true. Just as it's true that people live on Venus, Mars, and Jupiter, Neptune, Pluto, and all the other planets, and the planets move in our solar system. We're told that, Jupiter, Neptune, Saturn, and the others are gas giants. There's only mm-hmm. one gas giant in this solar system, and that's NASA, NASA.
John, this has been incredible information today, just incredible. And Aurora wants to have you on her show, too.
Sure, anytime.
So we only have a couple of minutes left. You want to give out your website and perhaps some additional information?
You know, it's not my website, but I contribute to it, and it's thelivingmoon.com, T-H-E-L-I-V-I-N-G, moon, M-O-O-N, .com. Dr. Judy Wood, you want to go to that. I mean, it's hundreds of pages long, and there's so much information that she gives out. Lunamoly.com is L-U-N-A-M-O-L-Y.com. That has hundreds of pictures of really clear artifacts on the moon, allegedly taken from Apollo pictures. Now, we know that Apollo didn't go, but what I think is when the Lunar Orbiter series went in 1965 to 67, they had another camera that took pictures and were used as the hoaxed Apollo pictures.
Hmm. Interesting.
And also, just let me remind you that this Perry Spolter's book, The Gravitational Force of the Sun, you do need a physics background to understand it. If you don't have a physics background, but you want to get it anyway, don't try to follow the math. Just understand the concepts of what she's saying. And she absolutely proves beyond a shadow of doubt that Einstein was wrong, that there's no limit to the speed of light, or that the speed of light is not a limiting factor, and that Newton was wrong on some of his
Well, John, you know, a few weeks ago I did a test of the Boyd-Bushman experiment with magnets, and this opposing field magnet fell slower, in a gravity field. But then if you drop a magnet configured in the attractive direction, it fell faster. Yeah. So I'll be showing that video at our upcoming conference on Memorial Day weekend, the UFOSkywatch.com. Listeners can go to this website. John, I want to thank you for coming on the air with us. A fascinating hour of extraordinary information. My God. Thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
Aurora's going to try giving you a call here. She wants you on her show. So thank you very much, John. Coming up next is Michael Elejon as he communicates with cosmic beings. That's next on Achieve Radio. Have a great day, everyone.